Hello, everyone. Welcome to Binge and Banter. I'm Angela.
And I am Emily, and we are going to talk to you all today about The Golden Bachelorette Episode 3.
That's right. My thoughts on this episode are that it was so heartfelt and so entertaining, and I didn't want it to end, to be honest.
I didn't either, and it breaks my heart every time we have to see one of these men leave.
It really does. Every single one of them, I think, gone too soon. Like,
yes. During the rose ceremonies, I'm literally sitting there like, who can you even kick off at this point that I'll be okay with?
Right.
It's nobody. The answer's no one.
That's why Joan feels so bad every time.
Yeah, I would too.
So we open with the cold open where it shows a scene from later on in the show. It basically gives you the climax to look forward to. And it's Joan saying that she doesn't know if she'll ever be ready. And that's obviously understandable for somebody who loses a spouse too early in life.
Mm-hmm.
But then we cut to the men waking up in the mansion and they're tired. They're tired.
What I thought was so funny about this is that is again such a grandpa dad move to just fall asleep anywhere. And we get those clips of them just falling asleep on the couch, outside on the couch, like anywhere. They're yawning, they're tired. And I'm like, that is any dad or grandpa who's watching TV on a Sunday night.
Absolutely. And then we get Jonathan saying that he said there's gazers and grazers, like meaning some people do stuff and some people are just watching everybody do stuff.
And one of those people just watching everyone do stuff is Pascal.
Pascal is the ultimate diva. I'm obsessed with him.
Can I just say that his date was perfect for him?
He is so lucky because, you know, on this show, they're like, somebody will be like, horses are my worst fear. And then they have to go like ride horses.
Yes. Yeah. I thought for sure they were going to make Pascal do something like dirty with his hands or go to a cooking class when he says he doesn't cook, something like that. No, he got the Pascal date.
I hope that later on, I hope he gets another one-on-one so that we do have to see him do something way out of his comfort zone.
Yeah, yeah, or even on a group date.
But Jesse comes in and Pascal, like I said, they're all tired and Pascal is like, this just made me laugh because it's like, no shit, Pascal. He says, camping just isn't my style. We're like, we know.
We know. We don't think glamping is either.
And he doesn't like Greg sleeping in the room.
Yeah. It's like he just straight up kicked him out of the room.
And then all the guys are like roasted Pascal. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, me too.
So Jesse says there's two one-on-one date and one group date. So it's about to get serious. We're finally to a week where there's, well, not finally, because it's only really the third episode. And it's only the second episode after night one. But I like when we start getting to two one-on-one dates, it's more spicy.
Yeah, I like that too. I like when the group gets small enough that we can do that.
So Pascal gets whipped away in a sports car. And okay, talk about budget. First of all, private jet?
Yeah. To Vegas.
Do you know how expensive that is?
That's what I'm saying. They were like, what date would Pascal want to go on? And I feel like they formed this date for him. Like, we're going to
get a
sports car. We're going to go to Vegas. We're going to get a private jet. We're going to get nice clothes, private performance. Like, everything about it just screamed money. And this is probably what Pascal does, like, on a weekly basis.
He got the pretty woman date, essentially. That's what people call it. And he even said, I feel like I'm Julia Roberts.
Yeah, I was like, he is calling the pretty woman date the pretty woman date. Like, he knew exactly what it was.
And it was kind of cool. I was like, I wonder if Pascal sometimes likes to be treated himself rather than always being the one to, like, treat them. Because he probably, let's be honest, is the one to treat the women that he's with because he's so wealthy.
I think his love language is acts of service. So people doing his laundry and cooking for him and stuff like that. I think that's his love language. But he gives love with, like, gifts, I think, gift giving.
Yeah. But we learned so much about him on this date. And it was so sweet when Joan said that she felt visible. Because we touch on this later in the episode. Joan even says this herself. But, like, she's not really opening up to these guys and they're pouring their heart out to her. And these people have lived enough life to have some freaking hard and heavy stories. So she's got her mom who's sick. She's got her husband who passed away. And now all these men are like pouring their own dark and heavy stuff onto her. And I don't blame them for that. That's how you have to form a relationship. And I love their vulnerability. But I feel like none of them have really tried to like crack into who Joan is and the things that she's been through. They know the basics. They know her mom is sick and they know that her husband passed away. But she has not really gone there in the way that the guys have. And you can see that that's kind of the theme of this episode. It's what's brewing under the surface. So when she was with Pascal and she said, "I feel visible," I really felt that. I was like, "I get you, girl, because you probably love these men, but none of them have made you feel visible yet."
Yeah, yeah. And I liked that that also kind of played in to the previous season with Jen. Like, that was a big storyline for her. And mm-hmm. she just wanted to be seen. Like, that was that whole storyline. And then it kind of played into this season. It was like, oh, now we're seeing the men really pouring into her and caring about her. And she's being seen.
Yeah. Ugh. It's what everyone wants. So we get the, what are those things called at Chuck E. Cheese? The animatronics?
Oh, I have no idea.
Like the mechanical Chucky and the other characters that they have on stage.
Oh, those things creep me out.
Yeah. Well,
I know what you're talking about. I don't know the name of them.
Wayne Newton was giving that.
I was like, where are you going with this? Did I miss a part of the episode where they were at Chuck E. Cheese?
Because like a lot of really rich and famous people, as they get older, they just like stuff their face full of fillers and put on a spray tan and have like the giant veneers. And I'm not trying to hate. He's Wayne Newton. He's an icon. He always will be.
Right.
But I was like, dude, just look old. It's okay.
It's okay. Yeah.
It's better to look now, old than look like a taxidermied human. I'm sorry. That's so mean. But
now I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Yeah, he did. Like, he wasn't giving much expression and wasn't giving much anything except for being like, you know, on SpongeBob when they form into like normal SpongeBob and normal Squidward and their yes. faces are chiseled and perfect. Like, that's what he looked like.
Giving handsome Squidward.
Handsome Squidward, yes.
Oh my gosh, the part where who was it? Gary and Charles that went to the store. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gary and Charles L went to the store to get all the melatonin and stuff because they're like, we're sick of this. We have to sleep.
Yeah. I love that they added that in there.
But Joan and Pascal danced to some Wayne Newton. I loved that. And then back at the house, I just have to touch on this because it was a storyline like starting to brew. Oh, actually, you know, maybe we should go through the date with Pascal and Joan and then go back to this because it's pretty important. So
okay.
Pascal, he said it's hard for him to be vulnerable. He came from a life where money was an issue. He said they had no bathroom and no shower in their house.
Yeah, it seemed like he had a hard upbringing and he was talking about how they were poor, how they didn't have a lot. And that shocked me because the way that he lives now is very lavishly. But now I kind of see why. My thoughts on Pascal from last week. I'm sorry, Pascal, that I ever said such things. Because now it makes sense. Now that we get to learn a little bit more about him, why he is the way that he is. And it's because he had that hard upbringing. And he got the opportunity to come to America. And he told himself, if I get this opportunity, then I am definitely going to take advantage of it. Kind of live the American dream and make something of myself.
Yes. And also, did you see that Instagram reel or TikTok that Pascal's daughter made?
No.
So I haven't actually seen it. I've only heard it reported on, but basically before this episode, I guess a lot of people were calling him a pampered diva, and she got on reels and TikTok and basically was like, you guys have no idea where he came from. He worked his whole life like super hard to be able to enjoy these things. So it definitely painted it in a new light, and then he kind of confirmed it in his one-on-one.
Yeah, we were definitely those people calling him a diva.
Hey, he deserved it, okay? I stand by it.
He is a diva, but he has a reason to be a diva.
Yes, he deserves to be a diva, but he is still a diva.
Yes, exactly.
So they really connected on this date, and it made me think that Pascal might go far.
I just didn't see like the raw connection. Like I felt like it was forced. Like she was having to like come up with things to say back to him. Like it didn't seem like it was as fluid as with some of the other guys, but mm-hmm. you could tell that Pascal was like really more open than the other guys. And he's really outgoing and they had a lot of fun. I just don't see like that raw connection with them.
I think their lives are just too different because Joan is hanging out with her grandkids in Maryland. She's right. living a very wholesome, low-key life.
Yes.
And Pascal is just living it up, private jets. Oh, and he goes, he's like, ah, private jet, the only way to travel.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, okay, Pascal.
You're like, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't see them being endgame, but. No. Because I just can't imagine that he would want to go settle down in Maryland or that she would want to go jet setting the world and living like the finer life.
Right, right. But either way, he does get the rose at the end of the date.
Yes, I see him lasting like till the week before hometowns.
Yeah, for sure.
So the group date, I thought it was going to be flag football.
I know, they're on a football field. And I'm like, they're on a football field and they're not playing football.
And NFL legends Eric Dickerson and Andre Reed were there. So I was like, oh, they're going to teach them how to play football. But then they're like, just kidding. We're going to play the Quaker Oats Kick Bowl. I'm like, yes, yeah. Get that ad money.
Get that ad money. I thought that was so cheesy. I was like, can we please just get the ad money a different way? Like,
yeah,
there's always it's like something.
Last year with the KFC or Joey's season with the KFC.
Yes. I'm just like, can we not? Can we just have a kickball game? Like, why does it have to be sponsored?
Honestly, though, at this point, it's like camp because they're like, have the contestants looking into the camera like, I eat my Quaker Oats every morning. And it's almost yes. like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the audience of like, you know, this is an ad. We know this is an ad. So we're just going to make it corny.
Yes, they made it as corny as possible. And like the oatmeal that they were eating, I was like, that is so fake. It was like a mountain of oatmeal and the fruits placed like perfectly where it needs to be. I was like, no, this is not real oatmeal. That probably tastes like cardboard. But 100%. They all played it off really well.
Speaking of played it off, they played their asses off in kickball.
Holy crap. Can we just talk about it? Like we have Greg diving. I mean, Kim like launches himself forward to try to catch a ball, doesn't catch it, rolls around the ground like
a diving roll.
Yes, everybody is just diving for these balls to catch them. They're throwing them hard at each other, like they're not trying to go easy on the other team. And it was a pretty competitive game.
Chuck tweaked his hamstring. I think Greg dove head first, like yeah. a slide.
Yeah, insane.
But I just have to give some sports coverage here because I super appreciated this game. The blue team was down by two. And then they started to rally. And what do you know? They tie it up. And who's up to the plate?
Charles L.
Charles L, everybody. He's up to the plate. He's never played kickball a day in his life. He's like, what am I doing here? He's asking the guys, do I just kick it and run? And they're like, yeah.
Yes. My heart hurts for Charles L. Because, you know, when you are in elementary school and you play kickball for the first time and you don't really know the rules at all, they get off of defense and they all go line up in their order that they're going to kick the ball in. And Charles L. looks at all the other guys and he's like, what do I do now? What am I supposed to be doing right now? And they're like,
yeah,
just wait till it's your turn to kick. Like, he's so stressed out that he's not going to do something correctly. Like, and I feel that because that's a feeling that we all had the first time that we played kickball. It's nerve wracking. You don't know if you're going to do the right thing. You don't know if you're going to make a fool of yourself. And he's like, they told me, Charles, just play. Just play.
Yeah. He took the inspiration and he kicks the ball, kicked it pretty hard, and Keith scores. So
yes.
Charles basically had the game winning run.
Yeah. Yeah. Charles for MVP.
Okay, so then Charles gets to go talk to Joan because now that the blue team won, they get to have more time with Joan.
And he tells her, Charles never played baseball. I love how he always talks about himself in the third person.
I think that's why he's so cute, is because he always does that.
It made me wonder if that's like a Japanese thing. Like maybe in Japanese, they sometimes just talk about themselves in the third person for emphasis.
Maybe.
But it makes me laugh every time.
It makes me laugh too. And it just makes me love him even more. Like, I love Charles L.
So he tells her about his conversation with Guy. And that actually happened when they were showing the one-on-one date with Pascal and Joan. So basically, Charles L. was sitting there thinking about his wife, and he had like so many questions that are so probably so many people have when they lose a loved one too early. Like, why me? Why her? Did I not do enough? What happened?
Yeah.
And he goes over to talk to Guy because Guy is an ER doctor.
And he's always had questions about the way that she passed away, and she passed away from a brain aneurysm. And he just never quite understood, like, some aspects of it. And apparently she had fallen down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what caused all of this or what led to all of this. And when she fell down the stairs, she had blood coming out of her mouth. And he never understood, like, why she had blood coming out of her mouth. And to him, he's thinking that it had something to do with the brain aneurysm.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asks Guy, you know, why? Why did she have blood coming out of her mouth? And it's something that he's thought about for years and years and years. Like, his wife has been passed away for 6 years, and he keeps thinking about that moment and doesn't understand why, or if he could have done something more. And Guy tells him she probably just bit her tongue.
Yeah.
Which can happen a lot when you go unconscious. You can bite your tongue. And especially falling down the stairs, I imagine that she could have bit her tongue really easily. And this was like, this moment, like, had me in tears.
I'm trying not to cry right now because it was like,
it was
the anxiety that he was dealing with is a level of anxiety that nobody should have to deal with. And you can just imagine. I think if I was to put myself in Charles L's shoes, it's like he probably couldn't get the image of his wife's mouth, like her falling and then blood coming out of her mouth. And then he said he was researching. He's probably Googling brain aneurysm, blood in mouth over and over and not finding any answers. And that's a horrific sight to see. It's almost like, I don't know. Yeah. It's just pure horror.
Yeah. Very traumatic situation or scenario that occurred. And him, like, first of all, Guy just being patient with him because Guy's like out of ER mode. Like, he's just living in the mansion and this gets sprung on him. And I thought the way that Guy handled it was perfect. Like, he told him exactly what he thought, but he said it almost like he was back in the ER room, like having to deliver bad news. And he was very gentle with him. And then he gives him advice and says, you know, you can't keep dwelling on why or what if, or if you could have done something more, like, you've got to move on. And I thought that was a really, like, sweet moment between both of them.
And we just see, I feel like we see Charles L. like transforming into a new healed person before our eyes. And it's the most beautiful thing to see. It really is.
Yeah. And I feel like he's struggling a lot more, or at least he's more vocal about the way that he is struggling throughout this process.
Yeah. So he sort of told Joan about all of this, and, you know, they had a nice conversation. And she's, again, just being such a good listener. And I think that really touched Charles, that she was such a good listener.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
But then Joan got a call about her mom. That was so scary.
I know. I was like, being away from her family. She left last time because her daughter had a baby and needed her back there. Like, there were some complications with it. And her daughter needed her back there. And then to find out that Joan's mom is still alive, like, that is scary when you have a parent that is 92 years old and you're going to be leaving for months and you don't know what could happen while you're gone. Like, there's also got to be, like, you're battling that, and you're also battling, like, not wanting to fall in love because you don't want to give yourself to someone else again. And, like, there's so many things that are probably going through Joan's mind right now.
And right after this, she talks to Keith for a little bit, and then she talks to Gary, and She kind of just, she didn't even tell Keith about her mom. And she told Gary, like, my mom's 92 and she's sick. Gary was very sweet about it. He was like, I'll pray for you. I'll keep her. He asked her name and he said, I'll keep her in my prayers. But Joan still, she didn't really describe how she was feeling or what she was truly going through. And it's just all these moments where you can see her holding back. Mm. And I really think it's because she thinks that she has to be strong for the guys.
Right. I feel like she's thinking that she's the bachelorette and she needs to be strong and be strong for these guys that are going through this process for the first time. When in reality, she does need to open up to somebody and she does need to be vulnerable with somebody to build that relationship with them.
It's fascinating because on the regular Bachelor and Bachelorette, I feel like the Bachelor is usually more like this. The Bachelor is very stoic and doesn't share much, and the girls share everything.
Yes.
And she's kind of like basically the Bachelor right now, it feels like. Because usually, like when there's a Bachelorette, a regular, like younger Bachelorette, they open up pretty easily. It's the guys that usually have a hard time opening up.
Yeah, for sure.
So Gil got the group date rose and I'm like, it's fine, but I'm just confused because ABC said they were going to cut him out as much as possible. And I don't really understand why. I mean, she was talking about how great they had her in there talking about how great a guy he was and like giving him the rose and everything. I personally don't care either way. I mean, he's part of the season. He got a restraining order right before the season. We get that.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm personally offended by it. I'm just confused why they wouldn't do that as like a business decision.
Yeah, I think that they knew he got the group date rose. You can't unedit that. Like,
yeah,
you can't make all the guys come back and give it to somebody else. You know, you can't. That takes a lot to have to like refilm that and give it to somebody else. And it's also just not true. He did get the group date rose. So I think they had to show like a little bit about him. Or else the audience who doesn't know about the restraining order and doesn't know about all those details, they would be completely confused on why Gil got the group date rose. Like, it wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, I guess so.
I get that they had to show a little bit of him.
They showed quite a bit, though. That's what I'm confused by. But it's just confusing why they said that they were going to try to edit him out. And then it also made it seem like he might go a little bit farther than they were implying in that original statement too.
Yeah, they said like he had a minimal role, and I was like, I never expected him to win a group date with them saying it was a minimal role 100%. That he played. You know, like, I just didn't think that he would win a group date. I definitely thought he was going to get sent home in this episode. So then for him to win the group date rose, I was shocked. But I guess it is what it is. And I mean, I feel like we're not really getting to know him that well.
And it's annoying, too, that, like, he knew he had been served a restraining order right before filming, and he still himself chose to go on the show.
Yeah, that's what's wrong with these men.
The guys got a massage. I was jealous.
Oh, my gosh. Can I just say that I was jealous, too, but I was also really glad that they did this for them, because I was like, they are probably actually really hurting. Like, after that kickball game, we saw knees cut up. We saw Kim talk about his shoulder being messed up, and he had like a knot on his shin when he was talking to Joan.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, oh my gosh, these guys are actually beat up. So I'm glad that they actually took a step to kind of, you know, reset, take care of these old men like that.
These old grandpas.
I know.
Okay. Her and Jonathan went horseback riding. Jonathan was nervous, but more importantly, back at the house, Kim was at the house. Riding bangers.
Great bangers.
We are the Mansion Men, the Golden Season Mansion Men. Something, 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 something. I don't remember the words.
I don't remember the words except for we are the Mansion Men.
It was giving, how's the song go from Wizard of Oz?
Oh, don't ask me that question. I have no idea.
We represent the lollipop something. I can't remember. Lollipop. Anyway. Yeah, the munchkins. It was giving that energy so hard. But he's going around to the guys like, okay, so we're going to sing this song. Let's have a little chorus practice here. Everybody gather up. And they're all just like, okay.
I don't know how you felt about this. Maybe you agreed with them, but I was upset. I was like, wrote this whole song for y'all to do something fun in the house. Like, you know, there's probably not a lot of things to do on days off. And they had a day off and he was like, you know what? Let's have a little fun. Let's all sing together. And everyone was like, dude, no. And that like hurt my heart because to me, Kim seems like one of the oldest ones. And it felt like your grandpa's telling you like, oh, let's do this for your mom. Like, this will be so cute, so exciting. She'll love it. And then you're just like, no, grandpa, that's lame.
It was really sad in that way. Like, I had two feelings about it. One was that it's like when, have you seen that meme where the grandpa invites all the grandkids to the cookout and only one shows up?
No.
Okay, so it's like somebody posted a picture of their grandpa and she says he invited all six grandkids over for burgers and I was the only one that came and he just looks really sad and he's old.
Yeah, I'm like, don't you say yes if an old man asks you to sing for Joan. And I get they're all the same age, but still.
That's what I was going to say. And I think the whole thing of like trying to corral everyone into practicing it for her and all that, that's my other feeling about it is it's a lot. Like if somebody was doing that, I'd be like, can we just chill?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll get
but
to
let
that.
Me be real. Thing that you would do, you'd be like, let's make a dance.
I know. I think that's why it hurt me because I was like, this is something that I would do and everybody would say no. And he handles it really well. He's like talking about Beethoven and he's like, well, Beethoven wrote this, but it was the whole symphony that performed it. He would have sounded stupid if he performed it by himself. I was like, okay, he handled that really well. He had a good comeback. I would have cried and I would have pitched a fit.
Nobody likes me.
That's exactly what I would have been like. I would have been like, nobody likes me. Nobody wants to do this with me. I was just trying to have fun.
So her, Jonathan's one-on-one day, he told her about the symbol of the turtle in Native American culture. He talks about how they have a hard outer shell. And so he kind of relates that he grew a hard outer shell to protect himself. But gosh, then he tells a story about basically out of the blue, at least according to him, his wife was like, I want a divorce. And he had to pack up his things and leave.
Yeah. Deep story, but I wanted to know more of the details. I was like, but why?
100%. I was like, okay, yes, it was out of the blue to you.
I want to hear.
Was it out
her
of the blue
of
to
the story?
Absolutely. Was it out of the blue to her?
Because I was like, this Ooh. Could be a red flag moment.
Jonathan's ex-wife, if you're listening, we need a 62-part TikTok series. Please and thank you.
Approximately 13 minutes long with a lot of edits.
Yes. Receipts, too. I need screenshots.
I need the receipts.
Illegal papers.
Yes. Yes. Here's my thing about the guys that have been divorced versus the guys that are widows. I think, and this is my own personal opinion, if I was Joan, it would be hard for me to choose someone who has been divorced versus someone who had been a widow, because I don't think that they have that same understanding of your loved one that has passed away still being a part of your life and still being a part of this new love.
Yeah, 100%. Like, and they're not going to understand her grief as well as the guys who have lost a wife or, you know?
Yeah, I just don't. Yeah. And I mean, of course, like they'll be able to comfort her and say like, no, of course, John will always be like a part of your life. And I would never want you to forget him and stuff like that. But it's like, I feel like to me, I would feel guilty, like bringing up my loved one that had passed away if I was in a relationship with someone who didn't have that same situation.
Right. And it ties a lot back into like what she says to them later, which we'll get to. But her saying that, like, she doesn't feel 100% ready.
Yeah. Yeah. Overall, this date, I was kind of bored.
I was too. Jonathan's really sweet, but like, there's not a lot of like va va voom to their connection.
Yeah. He's not Charles L.
But they saw hawks.
I know, but she didn't even explain to him what that meant to her. Like,
yeah.
I was like,
also, I lived in Atlanta, and like, there's not as many hawks where I live now as there are in Atlanta. But in Atlanta, hawks are everywhere. So I feel like you could go like every other day and see a hawk.
And yeah, I see a hawk probably every day.
Yeah. So it is a symbol. I'm not trying to take that away from her, but also that doesn't necessarily mean her husband was like looking down on her and Jonathan like, yep, that's the one.
Right. And I thought that's where she was going to go with it, was like, oh, this is him telling me that this is right. But she did not go that route. And I was like, is she telling us something?
Yeah, but back to in the theme of the episode, her not being able to open up, she said on this date that she felt like she was pushing down feelings.
Yeah, she did. And that she couldn't open up. And he even asked her when they're on the horses and they're riding, he's like, are you okay? And she's like, yep. And you could tell, like, mm-hmm. in her voice, something's not okay, but he doesn't push any further. And you wouldn't, because you barely know this person, you know?
Yeah. At the same time, I do kind of put a lot of how she's feeling on the men, because they should be pushing her to open up. They should be asking questions.
Yeah, they definitely should be asking questions about her life.
Okay, we have the cocktail party. She sits down, and this was probably so like nerve-wracking for her to just sit there and tell a group of a dozen guys that you haven't really been your true self, and that you haven't been opening up, and that you're committing to being open and vulnerable. If I had to say that in front of like a couple handfuls of guys, I'd feel sick to my stomach. I'd be like, this is too vulnerable.
And also telling however many men, I don't even know how many are left, you're telling every single one of them that you don't know if you will ever be 100% ready to find love again. And like, some people can take that a completely wrong way, you know, and not want to be with you after that. And so she's kind of like, okay, this is me, and I'm never going to be 100% okay with having another love, but it's something that I want to do, and I can give 80%, I can give 90%, but a part of me is always going to be with John. And I guess that goes back to what we were saying earlier, like, somebody who's divorced, they might be able to give 100%. And are they okay with their spouse only giving 80 or 90%?
Right. Are they going to be okay with like part of her heart always belonging to somebody else?
Right. Exactly.
And it's valid if they're not okay with that. That's why I feel like it was so hard for her to be vulnerable, because she was thinking like, some of them really might change their mind about me if I say this.
Yeah, exactly. And I would be freaking out, because I was like, if it was me, I'd be like, every guy in this room can just walk up and leave right now. Like, I'm kind of giving them an out, you know, and that's scary to do.
So Chalk pulled Joan first, but it comes back to the men, and they're talking about, oh, this was so sweet, how proud they were of her being vulnerable. So she really had nothing to be afraid of.
No, she had nothing to be afraid of the whole time.
But Chalk, his mom has had stage 4 cancer for 4 years, so he gets it. He understands everything she's going through with her mom.
Mm-hmm. He understands what she's going through with her mom. But then he talks about the 100% being in it. Yeah. And he kind of questions it, and they just kind of like dance around the conversation. Like, I don't know if you noticed that or not, but they really didn't come to like a solid answer or like a solid conclusion. It was like, they just danced around talking about being 100% in it or not.
Yeah, but I feel like they almost have like an implicit understanding of where each other is coming from because of the way that they both lost their spouses.
Yeah.
To illness. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it didn't have to be a spoken thing, but I just felt like they were dancing around something that they should have been talking about.
But they were talking about wanting to keep the memories of their spouses alive.
Yeah.
Which is really sweet. You never know how that's going to feel until it happens to you. Like, do you want to just put it all in the past, or do you want to keep their memory alive? And I feel like that's so challenging in a new relationship where you're exploring these new things and building something new with somebody, but you want to keep talking about your deceased spouse. It's almost like I wonder if people feel jealous in that kind of situation. Maybe I think they, it goes back to what we were talking about, because I think they would feel jealous if they haven't experienced it before. But if you've experienced it, then you know that it's not something to be jealous of. It's something to celebrate.
Exactly. Exactly. No, I totally agree. I think that's where like it comes in, where it gets a little iffy with some of the guys.
So then she talks to Gary, and Gary wrote a prayer for her. Gary is our Christian king this season.
Yes. And I thought that was so sweet. Like, he said he was going to pray for her mom as soon as she told him about her being sick. And then he has this prayer written up and in a frame for her. I thought it was like, oh, he's coming back to like, he remembers and he's really thoughtful. And he said he would pray for her. And now he's like proving it.
Yeah. Like, he actually put thought into that. Yeah. And is saying, like, I actually will be here for you.
Yes, exactly. And he's proving it.
Okay. So, Charles shows Joan a photo of him and his wife. This was so sweet.
I know. I just, Charles L's just, like, breaks my heart. Every time he's on.
Treasure.
Yes. Yes, he's America's sweetheart.
When he doesn't get a rose, the entire world will burn.
He better be our next Golden Bachelor.
This part was so sweet. I could not get over it. He says, when you're ready, Charles will be ahead of you. If you're not ready, Charles will be behind you.
He's so sweet. Again, talking in third person, but he's so sweet.
But he told her not to pressure herself. And I feel like she needed to hear that.
Yeah, I feel like Charles always knows the right thing to say.
Oh, plot twist that it was so uneventful that I almost completely forgot about it. A van pulls up to the mansion.
Oh, yes, a van does pull up.
And out comes our first Golden Bachelor, Gary. And he says, hi, Joan.
Hi, Joan. And she's giddy. She like runs over to him, gives him a big hug. And I was like, oh, they're best friends.
Yeah.
Like, instantly.
I was half expecting Gary to ask to join the season, to be honest.
I think that the questions he was asking was like dancing around it. And I was like, did the producers give him these questions to ask? Because he was like, have you ever thought about the fact that like your guy may not be here? And I was like, do you
what if he's right in front of you?
Right. I was like, so
he was fishing.
Yeah. And then she kind of said like, no, he is here. And then he was like, all right, I'm gonna get back in this SUV and leave.
It seemed like they briefly touched on like thinking about what the other person that they choose is willing to sacrifice and what you're willing to sacrifice. And it made sense, because that's kind of like why Teresa and Gary broke up, because they didn't actually, either one of them, want to move or combine their life. But also, did you notice at the beginning of the season, Joan said, I don't necessarily need to be engaged or married again. I just want to find somebody to have companionship in a relationship with for the rest of my years. That made me feel like she's totally cool with having like a boyfriend who she just has to travel to, and like spending 2 weeks there and then 2 weeks with her family. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be a traditional relationship.
Right. Which I love that for her. I love that she's being open-minded, because the more open-minded you are and the more willing you are to accept like these kind of positive experiences, the more good things are going to come to you, because you're not just being like set on one thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, Gary says Joan will always be special to him, and he basically reminded her that she's on the right path. And then we get our beautiful rendition of the Mansion Man. Guy took one for the team.
That's why I love Guy. I'm starting to love Guy more and more. Like, I hated him in his limo exit with the smelling the cologne, but he's grown on me. And I was like, thank you, Guy, for like taking one for the team and being there for Kim, because he took time to write the song. And if you weren't there, he probably wouldn't perform it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, he probably would have performed it by himself, to be honest, but you know, Joan appreciated it. Not enough to keep Kim on the season, but she appreciated it.
Yeah.
Maybe that was her final straw. She was like, I can't do these damn songs anymore.
Yeah. Maybe he was rubbing the guys the wrong way. I don't know. Because they really did not want to sing this song with him. And kind of seemed like Guy did it because no one else would do it. Like, I don't know. And he was mad after the talent show that he didn't win. And everyone was like, oh, Kim's mad.
I think Kim's deal is like he's too serious while also acting too goofy. Like, if you're going to sing a silly little song, like, don't be so serious about it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He is a very serious guy.
So, we get to the rose ceremony, and she gives a rose to Guy, Dan, who I've kind of forgot about. We didn't mention Dan one time in this episode.
I think that Dan is the ring winner.
What?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Facts, because he's always consistently in the top of getting called out at a rose ceremony.
That's true.
He always gets one of the first, and I feel like he's staying up near the top.
So, then it's Gary, then it's Jordan, then it's Chalk.
Chalk.
Charles L., and we get Keith, and then we get Mark. Oh, I forgot to mention, Mark was hysterical during the kickball game, hugging everybody that he got to base.
He hugged everyone.
I bet Kelsey was at home dying laughing. We say goodbye to Greg, so who the hell is going to do Pascal's laundry?
Right, and you better not get Mark to do it or else you're going to have an army of us coming for you.
And then we say goodbye to Kim because his song wasn't good enough for Joan.
No, but he does sing it one more time on the way out.
Yeah, oh, I like how the last two episodes we've just ended with a complete musical number.
Right? Yeah, and Guy comes out there and Kim's like, are you allowed to be out here? And he was like, I don't care. I'm giving you a hug. Bye.
But we also lost CK. We didn't see much of him.
No.
But yeah, the singing at the end is, they're just so precious. I love when they're so nice to each other.
Yeah, they are.
I'm going to miss Greg. Greg is, I don't know how to explain it because we didn't see a ton of Greg, but Greg is just so cool and sweet and like chill, like go with the flow. I just got such good vibes off of him.
Yeah, I did too. And can we also talk about how Mark got the last rose? He got the first rose last week and then the last rose this week. And I was like, whoa.
Well, they are doing a really good job this season of not letting us know who wins. Like, there's a couple people where it's like, okay, I know they're not going to win. They're doing such a good job of keeping like five or six guys in the mix, in the running.
Yeah. I just didn't like that. I was like, oh no. You gave Jack the last rose on week one and he was gone week two. And I was like, if you get rid of Mark next week, I'm going to be upset.
Yeah, we got to see more. But we got to remember in the previews, Mark says that he loves her.
She says she loves Mark.
Oh. Oh. Oh no. I'm so curious what's going to happen.
No, me too. And did you see the promo for next week?
Caitlin Baristo, the one and only.
Oh, that's what you took away from the promo?
Oh, sorry. Are you talking about when it looked like Chalk was leaving?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just like, Caitlin Baristo's on a striptease date with the guys. Let's go.
I was like, no, Chalk leaves, it sounds like.
Do you think he's really going to leave?
Yeah, I think they completely gave it away. I think he's going to leave. I think we just don't know why. And I think it goes back to the fact that she can't give 100% to him. I don't know. I just feel that way. And I feel like he gets jealous easily. So I feel like it's like a mixture because he's like, I'm just not cut out for this. And so he thought it was going to go a totally different way than what it's going.
Like, it might be one of those things where his feelings are too invested and it's almost like, I can't do this. I need to have you now or not at all.
Yeah, I don't believe people when they say that.
I don't either, but
leave the show for that.
Yeah, if you're really invested, you just stick it out and see what happens because you would have so many regrets if you actually liked that person.
Right.
You would have so many regrets if you left. Nobody would do that.
Yeah.
So I'm just confused. I'm just really confused. And if he leaves and they really gave it away in the whole promo like that, I'm going to have beef with ABC.
Oh, me too. Me too. I don't like when they do that.
This is my favorite episode so far, though.
Yeah, me too. I like the two one-on-ones in the group date. Like, I like that because you get to know like two guys really well. And then I like the competitive group dates.
Me too. And honestly, it was worth it to see the dives and the slides and the kickball game, even though they all got hurt.
It was. It was so very entertaining.
A little bit of housekeeping. So next week, what we're going to do is we're going to do our Survivor recap. And then on the end of that, we're going to have like maybe, who knows, 10 to 20 minute discussion about the Golden Bachelorette, like the highlights, rather than basically recapping the whole episode, because I feel like this season is so wholesome and drama free that there is really no reason to just go through line by line. Whereas Survivor, we're sitting there analyzing the game. And so we get really into like the game analyzation. There's not a lot to analyze about Golden Bachelorette except for to just bask in how cute and wholesome it is and like talk about these men's stories. So we really want to keep it to like highlights. So
yeah,
we'll have one episode next week and it will be Survivor and Golden Bachelorette.
Yes. If we can watch them on the...
Yes.
Yeah. It might end up being two episodes.
If not, yeah. If not, then we'll do like a longer detailed Survivor recap and then like a shorter, just a little blurb about the Golden Bachelorette.
Yeah, just to kind of give our thoughts and feelings, but also like we're so new to this and we're realizing how many hours actually go into podcasting. Mm-hmm. So we're realizing that taking on two shows it's getting ahead of us a little bit, and we're late with putting out our episodes and we want to get more on a regular schedule, and there's just no way to do that with doing two full 1 hour episodes a week. And we really want to grow our listeners. And we think, you know, maybe our listeners will listen to a full recap of Survivor and then just our quick thoughts and highlights on Golden Bachelorette instead of giving too much away.
And then if we end up having time, as we get more in the routine of things, we're thinking about recording like just generic pop culture episodes or episodes about other reality TV shows that we're watching, just like chit chat episodes, because I feel like that was like the first episode we did was more chit chat and it was so good.
Yes. Yeah, so. I agree. And so we just had to figure out exactly what we want to do. So in the next few weeks, you might see a little different variation of episodes. It definitely won't be the 1 hour recap of Survivor and the 1 hour recap of Golden. We'll try to figure out exactly what that looks like going forward, but we also want to apologize for last week's, or I guess technically still this week's Survivor recap video, in that we accidentally uploaded our recap of episode 2 as our recap of episode 3. That should be switched now, and so you should be able to listen to the recap of episode 3. But again, all I can ask is just for patience as we're learning how to do this. So yeah, we're going to go with some different formatting. But again, share with everyone that you know. Follow us on Instagram. Listen to us wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. So this has been Binge and Bacher. I'm Angela.
And I am Emily. And we will see you next time.
Bye.